Good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth, the program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I will be chatting with John J.J. Joseph, a professional clown. J.J. started clowning with the Medina Shrine Clown Unit in 1982. He has won numerous awards, competing against other professional clowns. He has been a lecturer at numerous clown gatherings around the country. He was inducted into the Midwest Clown Hall of Fame in 1998, I should say, and received the Lifetime Achievement Award from MCA in 2012. And JJ, so glad to have you. Thanks for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me, Jim. You know, I thought I'd get started by having a couple of things here for you, one of which is a red nose. Can't be a clown without a red nose, so I brought a red nose for you to put on. Here you go. Wow. And I also brought you a little clown hat to wear so that it'll put you in the mood here. How's that?
Oh, my gosh. That is just so much fun. Thank you so much. In fact,
you're welcome.
We should talk a little bit about your attire. In addition to the hat and ball you just gave me, both red, you are very colorful today, and you came somewhat in character without makeup, but everything else just looks great, and we'll take your picture afterwards, put it on our page.
Well, thank you.
I love the fact that you have this real bright blue and white striped shirt on, among some other stuff, and it looks like you brought some props, too. So,
Yeah. Again,
lots to talk about, and lots, looks like some radio demonstrations today, so it looks like a lot of fun.
Well, I'll have to turn into Channel 1 to watch, you know.
Anyway, you just look great, and thanks so much, and I appreciate the gifts. Wow, that's terrific. Does put me in the mood. You know, like I said, lots to talk about, and let's kind of go back to the beginning. At what point did you know you wanted to be a clown? I know in 1982 it kind of all started for you professionally, but when did you know, geez, this is what I'm interested in? What triggered your interest?
You know, it's kind of funny because there are probably two things I could look back at. And the first one is the fact that I have an uncle, my Uncle George, who is Boona the Clown. And he was a shrine clown in California.
Okay.
And I noticed how much fun he had working as a clown. And ultimately, when I became a mason and then ultimately a shriner, I was given an opportunity to become active within the organizations. And, you know, they have marching units, they have shrine clubs and all that kind of stuff. But the one thing that really interested me was the clown unit. And the interesting story about that is the fact that when I was a kid growing up, my dad was a mason and a shriner. So was my grandfather, all my uncles. But they knew that my dad knew the director of the clown unit at Medina. And he introduced me and said, "Hey, my son wants to be a clown." And I'll never forget old Ray, who I had known since I was a little kid, says to me, "You're too young, kid. You can't be a clown." And I was just absolutely taken back. I didn't know how to react. And for several years, I just kind of stayed away from it. And then about 7 years later, in our monthly magazine, I see an ad in the newspaper that said they're looking for clowns. So I made the phone call, and a fellow by the name of Bob Bingo Fitch answered the phone and said, "Hey, if you want to be a clown, come on over." And I went over to Bob's house. We talked. Turns out that Bob was a retired chief petty officer in the Coast Guard, and I was a chief petty officer in the Naval Reserve at the time, and we hit it off real well. And the first time I ever put makeup on was in Bob's kitchen, and it just kind of is history from there. And I think what's really ironic is the fact that in 1979, when I got initiated as a chief petty officer in the Navy, they dressed me up as a clown. So unbeknownst to me, looking back, you know, I had been dressed up as a clown years before I ever actually got started in clowning.
So it was almost ordained. I mean, you did the research, obviously, but there's got to be some training when you went into history. His house, and you put the makeup on, but there's more to it than that, I would think.
You know, there is and there isn't, and I say that because most of what's done in clowning, and especially today, is really one-on-one with a mentor. Years ago, there were some classes that you could go to at a junior college, or you could go to at a park district and learn how what the fundamentals of clowning are all about, and unfortunately, you don't find too many of those today. Also, if you look at clowns today, they're getting older. You don't have as many young people getting interested in the art of clowning. I mean, I have four kids, and none of them have any interest in clowning. And yet, there are people who are interested in other aspects of what we do, For example, there's a tremendous number of people who want to learn how to be balloon artists mm-hmm. or face painters.
Right, right.
But they don't want to put the makeup on to dress up and be a clown and learn some of the art of clowning. And that, in that respect, you know, we're seeing fewer and fewer, what I'm going to say, traditional clowns. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you think about clowning, really there are three main facial appearances within clowning.
Okay.
One is your white face clown. That's what we refer to as the boss clown in the hierarchy of clowns.
The boss?
The boss clown. That's the guy in charge.
Okay.
And typically that's a white face clown.
By being the boss, what does that mean exactly?
Well, you know, when you have clowns, and it goes back to the days in the circus where they referred to them as circus alleys, where the clowns would participate in the circus. And really, when you think about going back years and years ago, most of the clowns were involved with circuses. And
right,
there would be a boss clown, someone who was in charge, someone who really checked your makeup, checked your costume to make sure everything was in order, and then worked through the skit routines that were done in front of the audience and those kinds of things. And that was, one guy was the guy that kind of ran the show.
Okay. Kind of a director of sorts.
Yeah, exactly. Like.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, then you got, and you know, if you look at, in today's world, a Bozo the Clown, that would be a perfect example of a white-faced clown.
Okay.
All white, with prim and proper, everything, mm-hmm. everything matches, everything looks really nice and clean and crisp, and, you know, that's your typical white-faced clown.
Okay. Not necessarily the star. But
no,
the guy,
no, no,
kind
no.
of the foreman of the
Correct.
Group.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your Auguste-style clown. That it's really was more of a European-style clown. You know, clowns in Europe are more musical and have less makeup than the clowns here in the United States do. And that Auguste clown is, you know, it's more skin tones on your face and then accents on the eyes and the nose and the mouth. And, you know, there are different variations of an Auguste clown.
What are some of the variations, like sad or happy? Or,
no, but an Auguste, that's the happy-go-lucky, always pulling the pranks. That's
okay.
the guy that nothing matches when they wear something in their costume.
Okay.
You know, more of a prankster, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but when I say, you know, different variations in the face, some will have a muzzle, some won't. And what I refer to as a muzzle is the white area that's underneath your nose and surrounds your mouth. And of course, the large
like
accents.
Like a Bozo, that's the dark part.
Well, actually,
or the red part.
Yeah, that's the red
TV.
Part. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. If we're in color on TV, yeah, exactly.
Right.
But yeah, that, you know, and then different variations on the eye makeup and the nose make up the Auguste clown.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third category is really the only traditional American clown, and that's the tramp. And the tramp is the hobo, the down out of his luck guy that rode the rails during the Depression, and you know,
is that the Emmett Kelly?
Emmett Kelly would be a perfect example.
Emmett
of,
Kelly, of course, was with the Circus Ringling
sure,
Brothers and
yeah.
Barnum and Bailey, and pretty popular. If
yeah,
I recall.
You know,
yeah.
has a beard.
Yeah,
has white around the eyes, and the white around the eyes and the white around the mouth was from wiping their eyes and wiping their mouth as a result of being on the coal trains and getting all the soot in their face, and that's what was emblematical of the tramp clown. The, you know, the guy down and out of his luck, riding the rails, trying to. You know, find a way to stay alive.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
there are two variations off of that. One is the traditional tramp. The other one is what they call a happy hobo, someone who's more happy-go-lucky. And, you know, it's kind of funny because when I first started doing it, it was just a tramp. And then the issue came up, well, are you a tramp clown or a hobo clown? And I think there was a lot of confusion about what was a tramp clown and what was a hobo clown.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the hobos and tramps didn't know what it was. But, you know, it evolved into the tramp is more... just a ragged, torn clothing, that kind of stuff, as opposed to the hobo who's more happy-go-lucky, might have a cleaner-looking costume with mm-hmm. patches as opposed to tears and rips. And
was Ray Rayner more of the hobo clown, if we refer to the Bozo Circus?
Ray Rayner was probably more of an Auguste clown, if I remember
from
Ray Rayner.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, he didn't wear the beard. I don't recall he had
so the beard.
The beard is the distinction.
That's the key.
in the hobo and tramp clown. Yeah.
Okay. You know, you mentioned fundamentals before, and maybe this is a good time to talk about it. So when you first decided to be a clown, you're in that person's basement or his house or whatever, and he's going to mentor you. What are some of the fundamentals? I think you've touched on the makeup a little bit.
Yeah,
is that the key to the whole thing?
No, that's just...
Another fundamental.
Another fundamental. I think the key to the whole thing is, do you like to have fun? You know, do you like to entertain people? Because, mm-hmm. you know, in reality, and I will tell you, I've met a lot of clowns who they get dressed up, they look real nice, they got great makeup, but they walk down the middle of a parade route waving their hand, you know, doing one of these at the left and right motion on the hand,
yeah.
and there's nothing else to them. That's not a clown. It may look like a clown, but that's really not a clown. A clown is someone that can do something entertaining, get your attention, and have fun with you, and make you smile or make you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Just someone walking down the middle of the street waving their hand really, to me, is just nothing more than a person dressed up to look like a clown. And I know that rubs some people the wrong way, and I'll tell you, and if it doesn't, there are clowns out there listening. You know, that's so be it, but that's the way it is, and that's my perspective of it.
So in terms of the entertainment part, makeup then is one aspect.
Well, makeup is part of your appearance.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I always tell someone if they're thinking about getting into clowning,
yeah,
what
yeah.
do you want to be? I mean, what do you want to portray? Do
so
you want to be the prim
character.
And, yeah. Do you
so
want to
we're
be the
at character.
Prim and proper person? Do you want to be the prankster that, you know, plays all the jokes? Or do you want to be the butt of all the jokes? You're the one that can get the pie in the face at the end of the program.
Okay.
So, and actually what has developed from that is now what we call a character clown, which is using those same three faces, the white face, the Auguste, and the tramp, emulate something that is very noticeable, but now make it clown-like. For example, a policeman or a fireman or a chef might be perfect examples of what a character clown might
put
look like.
Put the fire hat on or whatever, whatever
now,
it takes.
You know, then put the face that you're comfortable with, whether it's a white face or an Auguste or a tramp-style face, put the attire on to go along with it, and then play that role as that particular character.
Which then can involve maybe some slapstick.
Oh, yeah,
some
absolutely.
Physical attributes, besides just climbing in a car with a little Volkswagen with 20 clowns, which I saw at the circus when I was a kid.
Sure,
it's performing skits.
Oh, absolutely, and skits are a great part of it, and it's a lot of fun to do skits when... and
are those
know, when
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but about the skits, are those improv, or are those pretty well written?
I think... if you're performing in front of an audience, it's like anything else. You have to practice. And those are well scripted out. Now, do we ad-lib in those sessions? Absolutely. In fact, I mentioned Bob Bingo Fitch earlier in my discussion. Bob and I have become best friends.
Mm.
And we do a lot of clowning together. And we will rehearse and practice a skit, and I can promise you that during the skit, Bob's going to do something to cause me to have to ad-lib and figure out where he's going. Even when we know the routine and we both practice the routine, he'll switch on me and take over my part. And now I have to reverse back and try to catch up with him by doing his part. And that's, you know, that's a part of being fun and having fun doing it.
Let's take a moment with the routine. What might be a typical routine that you might work out?
I think there are some of what they call the classics. And
yes,
I'll talk
what would
about
be some of those?
One of the classics might be what we refer to as the candy store routine.
The candy store.
The candy store.
Okay.
We have a set of old tin cans with a rope, and we talk about how this is our modern-day telephone. And Bob and I will talk to each other using the tin cans and the rope, and we'll get static on the line, and one of us will be the candy store, and one of us will be someone trying to buy candy from the candy store. And that's where he always loves to throw me off key and reverse the role. But typically what we'll do is we'll get the audience to come up and help us hold the line up to prevent static from being on the line, and we'll get a bunch of kids out on the line. And finally... Bob will say, "Okay, this is the candy store," and I'll ask him if he has any M&Ms, and he'll say no. And I'll ask him if he has any Snickers, and he'll say no. And I'll ask him if he has any lollipops, and he'll say no. But we got a bunch of suckers on the line. So, you know, that's one of the standby. That's a standby old style routine, and there are a number of routines like that. Another one is called the worker bee or busy bee, depending on how you learned it, where...
Real quick now, these can vary from nonverbal too verbal or vocal?
Oh, yeah, both. There's
so you're
a lot
doing
of both.
Oh, so we're, that both. Last yeah. one we were talking about, that was
lot
that
of
was
verbal.
Vocal. That was verbal.
But there's also a lot of body language that goes along with
it. A lot of
it.
Body language.
Sure,
so that's
sure.
what we were talking about, one of the physical attributes, being able
yeah,
to do that.
And, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, if you're going to be a clown, you got to really get into the slapstick, and you got to be able to take the pratfalls and all that. And I will tell you, it's nice. You know, it's nice to have that ability, but you don't really need it. I know when I was younger, I was always I was in pretty good shape. Having been in the reserves, I was working out all the time. And when we would do a parade routine, we used to carry a bench. And if you sat three people on the bench, it was fine. But if one of the guys on the end got off, the bench fell over. And I was always the one that fell off the bench. So anyway, I've got friends in other Shrine Clown units that have cars. And they're you know, rigged up cars that they're bucking cars is what they really are, and they'll knock the clown out of the back of the vehicle during the parade route. You got to be in pretty good shape to take a fall like that.
You're getting some bumps and bruises.
Oh
there.
Yeah. They are. But you know, majority, I would say 90, maybe even 99% of what we do isn't that kind of slapstick. It's more verbal and expressions and body language than it is actual physical falls. Although that really does add to the you know, to the skit when you can do that.
Back to the skit, you were talking about the candy skit.
Yeah.
And what was the other skit we were...
There's another skit called Busy Bee or Worker
Bee. Busy
Bee,
Worker Bee, yeah.
And
okay.
It has to do with, you know, two characters, and one's trying to trick the other character into saying, give me some honey, and it has to do with water and one guy getting wet. And, you know, this is something you really truly have to see to understand it, but it has to do with drinking water and spitting water out. And
spit takes and things
like
that. Yeah,
exactly, okay. And those kinds of things. But the guy that's trying to pull the prank gets pranked, and he's the one that usually gets the water.
Oh,
and
okay.
We always have fun with that. So
there's misdirection that's going on there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to talk real quick. We mentioned the nonverbal, while we're talking about routines. What would be a nonverbal routine? We can't do it on the radio.
No, but I can demonstrate to you, and then maybe you could explain exactly what just happened. But if I pretend like I'm sneezing and I go like this, two. Oh, I have a little donut here for you that I sneezed out.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you know, those are some simple sleight of hand
and
things
that
you could do.
Basically mime.
Yeah, and this would be more sight gag than anything else.
Right.
You know, and frankly, I do a whole lecture on walk-around props and paradeability and things that you can do to entertain a crowd. And
let's talk about the parade,
because
sure. You had mentioned before, if somebody just dresses up and just waves to the crowd.
One of my pet peeves.
Yeah. I never thought about it before, but you do have a point there. They're not really entertaining the crowd. They're enjoyable to watch, but
sure.
They're not doing much. They're just kind of dressed up.
Right.
What would be some things you'd do in terms of this paradeability?
Okay. A couple of my favorites that I have used in clown competitions and have been winners, one of which is I have a tennis racket, and I cut the tennis racket out of the tennis racket, the netting out of that. And I
the
took
strings.
Strings, and I took a basketball net, and with plastic snug ties, I attached the basketball net to the tennis racket. And
so it's not like a butterfly net.
No.
Oh, it's not, okay.
No, I then took a miniature basketball, and I would walk down the parade route, and I would throw it out into the crowd and have them shoot a basket, and I would catch it. And, of course, I tied the bottom of the basketball net so the ball wouldn't go through and run away. But I would catch that and then throw it out to the next person. And, you know, nobody ever misses because I catch it all the time.
And now it's participation.
It's participation, exactly.
And that's so simple.
Yep. The very first gimmick I ever made was a golf putter. I took a golf club, drilled a hole in the head of the putter, attached a fishing reel to it, and then attached the fishing line to a golf club. And from out in the middle of the street, you couldn't see the fishing line, but I could putt the ball out to the sideline where the kids are sitting on the curb, tell them to catch it and throw it back to me, and before the ball got to them, I was reeling it back in to go down to the next kid.
That's clever.
So those are just some things that you can do that are real simple, gimmicky things that you can make yourself. And I mean, there are 100 different things that you can do. We have one of the guys in our unit that has what we call an invisible leash. and he has a hot dog on the leash, and he walks down the parade route with his hot dog, and he talks about his pet dog Frankie, and he'll shake it a few times and ask if you know what kind of dog it is, and they'll come up with all kinds. No, it's a chili dog. That's why it's shaken, you know. So, you know, that's a part of the routine in walking down. That's entertaining.
Now, I'm assuming clowns each have maybe a particular gift. For example, one might be skits. Or is it all things to all people? For example, like, do you have to learn how to, if you're with a Medina group,
okay,
do you have to learn ballooning, juggling, the whole bit? Or is it just, I guess where I'm going is the training process once you become a part of the Medina clown unit.
Yeah, well, when I first joined the unit, it was required that everyone...
Because you have a lot of skills now. It must have been a little bit of training to get to this point.
Yeah, and a lot of it I went out and got on my own.
Oh, you did?
You know, you get the basics when you start. And with our clown unit, we teach guys how to put on the makeup and how to, you know, develop a costume and those kinds of things. But when I first started in the unit, you had to be a white-faced clown. That was required. You had to learn to put on that makeup. And I think in some respects, that's one of the harder faces to put on. The face is totally white, and then you clear out areas to make accents on your eyebrows and, you know, put some red on your nose and then develop a mouth that's smiley, you know, and to make sure you have the right lines, the right contrast in color using predominantly reds and blacks in that kind of face.
Just to have it be symmetrical.
Yeah, exactly.
It's painstaking, I would think.
Yeah. Today, you see more and more guys who are just getting started, and we stopped that requirement. You could do whatever you want. But a lot of guys today go for the tramp style because it's so easy to put on. And yet, the character is a woe-is-me, down-and-out kind of guy. And you got people who are real happy-go-lucky wearing that costume. And I'm going, it's not your character. Get away from that.
Right.
But it's a real simple face to put on. Typically, it's not as challenging, and some people take the easy way out, and we don't have the requirements that we once had in our unit, and frankly, sometimes I have some problems with my own unit in that we don't acquire the skills in clowning that we once used to. Now, Bob, my friend Bingo,
this goes back Bingo, to the fundamentals that you were talking about a few minutes ago.
Yeah, my friend Bingo and I, we sought out other clown groups. And we went to other conventions because they provided a lot of education. And you couldn't find that kind of education necessarily where we were at, although there was some there. To really take it to the next level, you know, my feeling was I wanted to expand my horizons as much as I can, learn as much as I can, and take those skills back with me and share it with other people.
Sure, sure.
Some people were very resistant to it. In fact, I think a lot of what happens in clowning, and if you think about the person who becomes a clown, a lot of them are type A personalities. You know, you're in business, you're doing whatever you're doing. Now all of a sudden you're putting this makeup on, you got this costume on, and you take on a whole different personality. And you know, you put a bunch of type A personalities into any one room and you got a problem sometimes. But it's something that...
A lot of energy there.
Yeah. But I think, and if we use it to our abilities and we help each other, it makes for a better situation. But sometimes you get resistance. People don't like to be told, that doesn't look good. And I'll never forget one of the guys who was a very good friend of mine was one of the first guys always eliminated in competitions. And he could never understand why. And I told him, I said... Wee Willie, you got fake dog poo on your shoe. It doesn't look good. It looks good, it's funny, and I'm going to wear it. Well, we'd go into competition, and they'd see the fake dog poo on his shoe. He'd be one of the first guys eliminated. He couldn't understand why, and he could never get over that. And, you know, those are some things that then people get mad because you're trying to help them out, but they take it the wrong way. Now, for me, I always thought, you know, tell me as much as you can because I want to improve. And it's your story. When one person tells you, you say, that's their opinion. When two people tell you something, maybe you better start listening. But when it's three and four, maybe it's time to reconsider what you're doing.
Right.
So, and those things really help develop us. And I guess where I'm going with this is Bob and I became very successful in clowning, both in and out of the Shrine, because we learned a lot, both from within the Shrine and from outside the Shrine. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. we won a lot of competitions and got a lot of recognition. And frankly, I think sometimes that their envy became a real part of it.
Hmm.
And then there were
egos in every business.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting. You wouldn't think there would be egos in clowning.
Oh, unfortunately, absolutely, there is, and it's big time. And
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and the sad part about it is we got labeled as competition clowns. You guys are competition. We're kids clowns. We like to entertain kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same guy that's walking down the middle of the street waving their hand, saying hi to everybody, while me and Bingo are out working the sidelines, interacting with the people.
With the skits and things like that.
Exactly. And now which one's entertaining? And which one's the real kids clown?
Right. I just want to back up real quick before we take a break, but I never really asked you, what was your first experience like as a clown? I mean, we're going to, was that in 1982 or even before
then? It was actually in 1982.
Okay.
I had been going over to Bingo's house a few times to practice putting on the makeup. And then July 3rd, 1982, we did the Evergreen Park Parade just on the south side of Chicago.
Okay.
And Bob gave me a costume to wear. He gave me clown shoes to wear. He gave me a prop to carry in the parade and down the parade route I want. And I really didn't know what I was doing at the time. But
were you nervous?
I was a little apprehensive.
Okay.
But I would say that was one of the things that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed doing that and, you know, just walking down the parade, interacting with the people and doing something stupid like shaking someone's hand and saying, are you scared? And they go, no. I say, well, then why are you shaking? You know, so those are just little things that, you know, in the very beginning that I learned to do.
Well, I am talking to John J.J. Joseph, an award-winning professional clown and noted lecturer at numerous clown gatherings around the country. And JJ is a member of the Midwest Clown Hall of Fame. When we come back, we'll talk to JJ about hospital clowning, the business of clowning, and the ups and downs of being a clown. You're listening to Word of Mouth. We'll be back right after this. And that goes back to the 1960s. That's Gary Lewis and the Playboys, Everybody Loves a Clown. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich, and we're talking to John J.J. Joseph, an award-winning professional clown and member of the Midwest Clown Hall of Fame. And for the people who are just joining us, let's just back up from the first segment. What are the three types of clowns again? That was sort of interesting there.
Okay, the clown hierarchy starts out with the white-faced clown. That's the person who's the boss clown, kind of directs all of the activities within the organization. There's the Auguste clown, which is a European-style clown from the standpoint of makeup, but that's the prankster, the guy that nothing matches in their costume, and they're always trying to pull pranks. And then the third one is the tramp or hobo clown that usually is the brunt of all of the skits that are done, and they're the ones that usually gets the pie in the face. And then, of course, you have the character clowns, which can be any one of those three faces, but they emulate something famous like a policeman or a fireman or a chef or something along those lines.
Now, we talked about a lot of the fun parts of being a clown. There's got to be some obstacles, some challenges to being a clown, too. What have you encountered over your career?
Well, you know, there are a lot of skills that you can do to enhance your ability to entertain people. And sometimes you're not just talking about whether you can twist a balloon or you can do some magic or sleight of hand to entertain someone or maybe do some juggling or carry a prop around that will entertain people. But there are a lot of things that really people get involved with. And I like to say, as you just mentioned, one of the obstacles is the envy part of within clowning.
Mm-hmm.
People become jealous when you become noted for whatever it is that you do. And sometimes those are things that are difficult to overcome within an organization.
Now, Gary Lewis sings Everybody Loves a Clown, but, we found out over the years that's not necessarily so. There is that other kind of, unfortunately, dark side of clowning. And I guess where I'm going with this, how do you overcome that attitude as an entertainer? Because you're there to entertain, to, you know, make people laugh, enjoy themselves, but then you get this other kind of dark side. What's your observations about that?
Well, you know, I think it's a real broad question. It's a good question. The first aspect of it is that, you know, people say, well, why are people afraid of clowns?
Right.
And I think a lot of that has to do with their own parents. Hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I've been out at a gig and someone will walk up with a kid and say, oh, look out, the clown's going to get you. Well, what's the first thing and the first impression that that child had based on someone that they know and trust telling them, watch out, that clown's going to get you? Now, you know, first of all, we have to overcome some obstacles because the first thing that someone sees is they see this person with brightly colored hair, a brightly colored costume, mm-hmm. a red nose, and big shoes, and they're different from everybody else. And now you got a parent or a family member saying, look out, they're going to get you. It's kind of like going to see Santa Claus for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many times, and I do play Santa Claus as well in the winter, and mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times people come up and force a child to go see Santa Claus. And, you know, here's this guy in this big red costume with this big white beard, and you really can't see much of their face, but yet, again, go see Santa Claus. Now, they know Santa Claus is good, but they're afraid because of the image that's portrayed sometimes and the fact that you got someone forcing the child to go see Santa Claus when mm-hmm. they don't want to do that. And what I try to do is when I'm clowning, when I see that happening, I create as much distance between me and that child as I can to start. I back away from the situation. If it's a child, I'll try to play peekaboo with them. Just putting my hands up in front of my face and, you know, gradually peeking out from the left or the right or the middle or the top or the bottom. To show that, you know, maybe I look different, but I'm really not scary. And if it continues, then I really divorce myself of the whole situation and walk away.
You know what's kind of hurt, too, I think, are the... whether it's a Santa Claus or a clown, the characters they have, the movie, the Hollywood industry has delved into that for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, and that's the dark side. And unfortunately, it is what it is. It's Hollywood. It's not real. You know, you can give a couple analogies. One of them is the movie Jaws. You know, how many people wanted to go swimming in the ocean after they saw Jaws?
You're absolutely right.
You know, and the sad part about it is I think a lot of why people are afraid of clowns is because it's the in thing today. You know, you could have a bunch of kids that, oh, I'm afraid of clowns, I'm afraid of clowns. They're not afraid of clowns. It's just the in thing, and their other friends tie into that, and, now they look cool because they're afraid of a clown. It's the same kids that come back and want balloons later. You know, so, I think it's an unfortunate part of what we do, and we all have to do whatever we can to try to change that person. I'll give you a perfect example of something that happened with me.
Okay.
When I was president of the Great Lakes Shrine Clown Units Association, we hosted a convention here in the Chicago area, and I brought in a guest speaker to talk to our group who was the nurse in charge of the operating room at Shriners Hospital. Well, I got a call from the director of the hospital saying that she'll come, but she wanted to know if a lot of people were going to be dressed up as clowns at our awards banquet. And I said, well, no, it's our awards banquet. You'll see most people in a tuxedo and coat and tie. You won't see anybody in costume. He said, oh, that's a good thing. And I said, why, what are you talking about? She's scared stiff of clowns.
Goes way back with her.
And she was not a young person. So she came in, did the presentation, and it's funny because every Wednesday morning, or most Wednesday mornings, I go to Shriners Hospital and I appear as Dr. Goofer. And
yeah, let's talk about that aspect. We'll switch gears here. The hospital clowning. I want to tie that into what I was just saying.
But okay, it was as a result of talking to this nurse when we were at our banquet and asking her if I could come visit her at the hospital that we actually got her now to the point where when she sees me in costume, she comes up and gives me a hug. Or she wouldn't even come near a clown in the past. But, you know, as a result of working with her and just
talking
to her.
What a transition.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we didn't know this at the time, but when we would go make our rounds and we'd go see the kids who were in the recovery room and visit with the families, she would run away and hide. And now it's to the point where she would come out and seek us out. And when she saw me, she'd always give me a hug. And she wouldn't even come near us in the past. But, you know, you're able to talk things talk through things with people, and if they get the opportunity to say, hey, and sometimes it's just a matter of watching someone put the makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm me. But when I put the makeup on, I just become this other persona.
Character,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and it, I'm still me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and again, it goes back to, you know, when I first started clowning, it was, the in thing was to do is try to scare someone. And I thought that was funny. And I never forget, one of the props I used to carry around was a box. And on the front of the box, it said Baby Rattlers. And I would walk around going at the circus, at the Shrine Circus downtown Chicago, I'd walk around going, Baby Rattlers, finest collection in North America. Well, I had this box with a screen over the top,
geez.
And I would walk towards someone, and they would run the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Well, if you looked in the box, it was nothing more than some baby rattles glued to the bottom of the box. But the perception was I had baby rattlers, and they were afraid. Well, I don't do that routine anymore just because it's not fun to scare people.
That's not part of
what clowning is. But yet, there are a lot of people that still do that.
Let's go to, talk about, you were mentioning the Dr. Goofer character,
which
you take to hospitals.
Correct.
And hospital clowning. So what do you do there? How do you go about entertaining, I guess, sick kids?
Yeah. Well, we're fortunate, and most of the work that we do is at the Shriners Hospital in Chicago, which takes care of kids that are have cleft palate problems.
Right.
They also are, it's an orthopedic type hospital, so we're not dealing with a lot of really sick kids, although in some of our hospitals, they specialize in other areas, like in Cincinnati, they have a burn unit where the kids are severely burned, and they're working there. But in our hospital, it's mostly orthopedics and cleft palates that we deal with. And we have a screening process that takes place every Wednesday morning at Shriners Hospital, where if a child is in need of orthopedic care or cleft palate care, they can come down and be interviewed and see if they can gain admission into our hospital, where care is done regardless of the cost to the patient. There's no out-of-pocket cost to the patient, regardless of their ability to pay is the word I should have used. So we go through a screening process. What we do is we walk through the waiting area, and we entertain the kids and their families. And a lot of times it's Bingo and myself, or maybe it's Inky or Hot Dog, or there are a handful of us that are there pretty much every Wednesday morning. And I have a routine that I go through as Goofer the Clown. And I have a doctor's bag, and in the doctor's bag, the first thing I pull out is my stethoscopic plunger. And it's nothing more than a stethoscope with a plunger attached to the end. And then I have a number of other things in the bag, some of which are some x-rays that a friend of mine, Miss Pocket and Adira, made for me, and those kinds of things that I can go through and examine someone. I take out a stuffed animal, which is a black lab. And I give someone a lab test, and then I have a stuffed animal that's a cat.
Oh, this
and
is
I can
some creative
do a, I can
stuff.
Do a cat scan, and then I have results. I have a little stool sample with a little wooden stool in the bottle, so I can show them their stool sample, and I can pull out their X-rays, and the X-rays are all gimmicked up. So that you see an elbow with a tennis racket on it, so they have tennis elbow. Or maybe they have water coming off of a knee joint.
I love this play on words that you guys come up with.
Yeah, there are about a half a dozen or dozen different x-rays that I will pull out of a bag to show someone and just mimic that whole process. And there's a whole routine that I go through, and I never, ever examine a child. We don't ever want to be misconstrued in what we say, regardless of the fact that we're in makeup. I might have a lab coat on or whatever that says Dr. Goofer. I have a name badge that says Dr. Goofer, but we don't ever want to examine the child. Mm-hmm. They have enough they're going through in reality that we don't need to poke and prod them, but we will. And I say the siblings and the parents are fair game, and that child becomes my assistant. So we'll examine the parents and do all of this stuff with the parents and not the kid.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that, and then we'll typically go through the ward, make the rounds in the room. We always check in with the nursing staff to make sure it's okay. We always knock on the door to ask permission to if we could come in and visit with the child. And frankly, sometimes maybe a child just got out of surgery and doesn't feel up to having visitors.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we really teach our clowns not to just barge in the door and say, "Hey, I'm a clown. Let me be here to entertain you." It's a serious side that we, you know, we knock.
Well, there's
on the
a
door,
lot of thought that goes
permission.
Into that.
Sure.
You got to find kind of the correct balance.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So we try to entertain the families and utilize that child that is the patient as our assistant, mm-hmm. to let the family know a little bit about what's going on and make them the center of the gimmick and the center of the attention.
Now, besides gimmicks, you use, and you've talked about props, balloons is a big part of your act, too.
Yeah, we do a lot of balloon work, but we'd never do it in the hospital.
Never in the hospital.
Never in the hospital for two reasons. Number one, balloons are a choking hazard.
Hmm.
And when you get a young child, and you know, if you, it used to be that if you were under three, we always said you can't have a balloon. Now, if you read the bag of balloons that you buy from the manufacturer, it says choking hazard for kids under eight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's for insurance purpose or whatever it might be, but I won't give a balloon animal to a child under three.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got grandkids, and my oldest one's four, and you know, the young ones don't get a balloon, and the older ones only get one when I'm there to supervise. So,
let's talk about the ballooning actually aspect.
Sure.
We were talking about fundamentals in the first segment,
okay.
Whether it's makeup and costumes. We never really got into the ballooning aspect.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw you putting something together before the show. How do you learn that skill? Do you have that with you, by the way? Or is that...
Yeah, there. It's in the corner on your table there.
Okay.
That's the monkey climbing the tree with a banana. That's one of the most requested balloons that I do.
Really?
I also do some balloons.
Yeah,
and
for those, it's not, it's a visual, we're an audio medium, not a visual medium, but it looks like a monkey climbing up a tree. I mean, it's very, very clever and creative. Was that part of the training process at Medina?
Well, no.
Did you pick that up yourself?
Actually, I did learn that from a few of the older clowns at Medina who got me started. And again, my friend Bob Fitch, and he'll be the first one to tell you,
mm-hmm.
he got me started twisting balloons, but he can't do half the things I can do now.
Mm.
And that's just a matter. Some people pick it up right away, and it just comes easy to them. Some
so what sort of things do you do besides the monkey
well,
and
I
the
was just
banana
gonna,
tree?
I have a, unfortunately, it's a sample booklet that you can see that your audience can't see, but I also do some work on cruise ships. And
oh,
in order
of course,
to do
yeah.
that, I had to submit a resume, and along with the resume, some samples of my work. And the reason they do that is there are a lot of people on cruise ships that don't speak English. So if they want a balloon, how do they tell you what they want? So I have to have a sample booklet with some things that I can do on the cruise ship. They require that you make balloon animals that can be made in less than 3 minutes because they don't want a big, long line of
well, that
people
makes
waiting.
Sense. Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a sample, and in this book there, and I'll just read out what they are. There's a hippopotamus, there's a lion, there's a horse, a zebra, a penguin, an elephant.
Unbelievable.
There's just
yes.
30 different examples,
Gosh.
And I would say that monkey up the tree, there's a mermaid that I do and a giraffe that I do. Those are some of the more popular ones. A fish, a poodle, a rabbit, a flower, a butterfly. There's a whole, like I said, there's
it's
30 different examples
yeah, yeah.
of the balloon work that
mm-hmm.
I do, the balloon art
mm-hmm.
that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you just said balloon art.
Yep, and it is art.
And takes one heck of a lot of practice.
Yes, it does. It does.
Now, you have some other props there, too. You do a little bit of magic as
yeah,
well, right?
Yeah, part of it is doing some right. comedy magic. And I have a prop here that I'll take out. This is... some people call it the professor's nightmare,
mm-hmm.
and I always start with a piece of rope, but because we're doing this and in essence of time here, I'm going to just show you that I have three pieces of rope that I cut, and all three pieces of rope are of the same color,
mm-hmm.
the same size, quarter
mm-hmm.
inch, and they were supposed to be the same length, but unfortunately that they were cut differently. But if I take all the ends and I match up the ends of the rope, you will see that now all of the rope are of equal size, length, and color. All the ends match.
Right, right, right.
Well, now most kids would say, no, there's a little bit hanging out the bottom there. And then I would say, oh, you're absolutely right. So let's put three on this side, three on that side. Now we have three up and three down. They're all the same size, color, and length, right?
Yes.
Well, except that when I stretch them out, then they really do become the same size, color, and length. I have one. I have two. And I now have three pieces of rope, all the equal size, length, and color.
Very clever.
Now,
very clever,
yeah. I take this to another level by tying the rope together. And as I mentioned, when I would do this live in front of an audience, the piece would be one. We would cut it into those
mm-hmm.
three pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But then I tie them back together and show how I can restore the rope back into one piece. And most people will say, oh, but there are knots in the middle. And I say, oh, you know, right. Let's finish tying them all together. And then by saying the magic word, maybe
well,
we
let's
can
describe before
that.
you say the magic word.
Sure.
What we have going on here now?
Well, we have three pieces of rope mm-hmm. that are all tied together, and the appearance is that there are three pieces of rope. All three are the same size, color, and length. And when I untie them and I say the magic word and I stretch it out, you'll find that actually I restore it back into one piece of rope.
Oh, gosh. That is just terrific. Just terrific. Oh, my gosh. That is just terrific.
And there are some other things. There are some other things that I do with a change bag. But, again, these are mostly visual acts. And I can take a couple of scarves, put them in a bag, and you'll see that the scarves initially, when I take them out, are three separate scarves, and the bag is empty. There's nothing in the bag but my hand. But when I put the scarves in the bag, I can make them disappear. And I put the first two bags, and what? By the way, when I put the first color in, what was that?
That was red.
And the second one was?
It looks like a blue or
blue.
Purple.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I say the magic words, and guess what happened? The first color I put in here was what?
Well, you had red.
Okay, now the red one became blue, and the blue one became red. How was that?
I want to tell you, there's more to clowning than meets the eye.
Yeah, now if I put all three colors, red, yellow, and blue, into the bag, and I say the magic words, and I ask you to reach in the bag and pull out the scarf.
I'm now reaching into the bag, okay.
Okay, and they come out tied.
Oh, my gosh.
And when you open it up, you see it says what?
Tied. I tell you.
Again, it's a visual trick, not good for the radio, but...
But it just shows the fundamentals, the skills that are involved in clowning. We have to take another break. We are talking to John J.J. Joseph, Hall of Fame clown person, and we will be back right after this. Don't go away.
And then you get a great big custard pie in the face. Make him laugh. Make
and
him
that's
laugh,
Donald
make
O'Connor.
Him
make him laugh. That's from Singing in the Rain, the old movie with Gene Kelly and Debbie Reynolds. And that, by the way, if you ever have a chance, go on YouTube and watch Donald O'Connor do that amazing Make Him Laugh skit that he's doing while he's singing at the same time. And we are getting a lot of laughs here. We are talking to John J.J. Joseph, an award-winning professional clown. And we had, before the break, we're talking about hospital clowning. And I did want to ask you about your first experience in that.
You know, Jim, I look back at my clowning as a career, and one of the first experiences I had in going into a hospital for the first time was with a clown who was a very good friend of mine, Art Miller, Chick the Clown, who has since passed away, but he was a decorated World War II veteran. And Chick and I talked about going into this hospital for the first time, and I told him I was a little apprehensive about it. I wasn't sure, you know, how this was going to work. He said, JJ, don't worry about a thing. He says, they're just kids like everybody else, except they're in wheelchairs and wheel beds, and instead of stepping on your clown shoes, they'll roll over them. And we walked into the room, and you, just the looks on their faces mm-hmm. just melted me, and everything was fine after that. And we really enjoyed, you know, entertaining the kids that were in that room.
That's a heartwarming story. You know, speaking of memories, what is some of the memories you have in being a clown, some of the more ones that just kind of stick out in your mind?
You know, besides the story with Chick, I would tell you the one story that always comes to mind is when I was asked to participate in one of the Make-A-Wish programs mm-hmm. where we went out at the time when O'Hare had the O'Hare military side. The Air Force would supply an airplane, and we would take all these kids from Make-A-Wish, put them on the airplane, and run them down the active runway at O'Hare, pull all the window shades down, and pull into a hangar that was decorated like the North Pole. And our job, my job and Bingo's job, was to escort the kids onto the airplane and sing Christmas carols with them.
Jeez.
And we were told that probably half or more than half of those kids wouldn't be with us next year.
We would
take these kids on this magical ride down the runway to the North Pole and into the hangar where they would meet Santa Claus and mm-hmm. be given gifts. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that they stopped that program because it was a great, great program. I remember specifically there was one family that really, one little child's name was Anthony, kind of hung on to me and just didn't want to let go. And I had given them my my card, my clown card, which had my contact information on it. And they called me several months later and said that Anthony's going, he's going into surgery. You have to excuse me for a minute, but he asked if JJ could come visit him before he has the surgery. And I got to tell you, I did everything I could to make that happen for that kid. And, it's a part of my life that I've experienced with my own grandson dying of cancer.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry, but, it's those kinds of things that make this all rewarding and make it all part of who we are and what we do and just brings a whole different aspect to what we do.
Well, what you do is very, very important. And in addition to learning, not just the fun part of clowning, there's what it looks like the gratifying and satisfying part of it. And
Yeah.
And what you can take away from it as well, and others can take from it too. I think we've taken a lot from you today and learned so much about clowning, JJ. We are out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming. And thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Just our pleasure. We've been talking to JJ. And by the way, if you'd like to get a hold of John JJ Joseph, if you wish to contact him, go to his website, JJ360.
No, no. Oh. That's the email address. But
oh, okay. Go ahead.
It's www.jj, and spell it out, JAYJAYTheClown.com.
Let's say that one more time, because I don't want to mess people up.
Sure. www.JAYJAYTHECLOWN.com.
Okay, we got that. Thank you again for being here.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday at 11 o'clock a.m. when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.